this is Joe Polish, president of Piranha Marketing. Today I'm doing an interview. This is going to be an excellent interview on marketing with two very bright marketing people. One, my good friend and excellent marketer, Mr. Brian Kay out of New York. And also, I'm sitting here with the world's greatest copywriter, Mr. Gary Halbert. Now, a lot of you may have heard of either Brian or Gary. Gary probably is one of the most well-known marketing guys throughout the world. To give you a little bit of background, and hopefully I can finagle him to tell you a little bit more about himself than I could. But he has written many, many million-dollar promotions for many people, including himself. One of the promotions that he's done is a sales letter that has been mailed more than any other sales letter in history. I believe the letter has been mailed probably about a billion times and has generated, to the best of my knowledge, around $58 million in revenue, if not more. Is that about correct, Gary?
The last I know for sure how many it was mailed, there were 600 million that were mailed as of about 2 years ago. And my ex-partner who told me that is now dead. That's Dennis Hasslinger. But the dollar volume is very much higher than you're talking about there.
Gotcha. Okay, well, it's a pleasure to be sitting here with you two guys. So let's talk a little bit about marketing so people listening to the tape can hopefully learn lots of stuff. Now, what I first want to start off with is, if you had less than $500, what method of marketing would you use? And I'd like to direct this question towards you first, Gary, and then we'll just bounce questions back and forth.
Well, if you've only got $500, I think that really narrows your choice. You're obviously not going to go out and run full-page newspaper or magazine ads. You can't do very much with television. That would pretty much lead you to do something of a two-step program with a lead generating. That, you know, do lead generating via classified ads or very small space ads, followed up by a hard-hitting sales letter. You can do that on a $500 budget.
Gotcha. Well, what about you, Brian? What would you say?
As far as marketing on a $500 budget?
Yes.
I would probably drop postcards that would generate inbound leads into an 800 number that was some kind of recorded message to request a letter, much in the same way that Gary's talking about.
Okay.
Possibly pick up the phone and do some type of telemarketing as well.
Yes. The less money you have, the more you have to rely on some forms of manual marketing and a lot of intelligence. Actually, not having a lot of money sometimes is an advantage, because then people are less likely to spend it foolishly, as do people with very deep pockets. Gary, since you're such an extraordinary copywriter, what I'd really like to do on this tape is to really get the listeners to understand how valuable an actual sales letter can be. When people hear me talk about copy and copywriting, a lot of people just don't really get just how important copy is and copywriting in general. Can you maybe elaborate in as great a depth as you'd like the importance of a sales letter and why people need to communicate in print and what the purpose of all that is?
Well, let me sneak up on it by talking about just how important words can be, and then I'll talk to you about how important even a single word can be. Most people know that a headline of an ad is probably the most important component of the ad. There are different figures that are given, that it's responsible for 70% of the effectiveness or 80% of the effectiveness. I don't know what the real figure is there. But I do know this, that you can run the same ad with a different headline and improve, and with nothing else changed whatsoever, that can increase your results by a factor of 500 to 700% just by changing the headline. Now let's talk about importance of getting just words right. There is one word that one company used that doubled the volume of their sales. Can you imagine that just one word, and this is a giant multi-million-dollar company you could use, and what it was for a shampoo, and it was on the directions. And it said, lather, rinse, and then they added the word, repeat. Lather, rinse, repeat. And so what was happening is everybody bought their shampoo was using twice as much. The word repeat doubled their sales. All right. On the other hand, though, talking about the importance of copy, it's really important to demystify the thing about copy. What really effective copywriting is actually an enticing, but generally from the heart, straightforward message. And let me tell you just something really, really important about copywriting. Most people who have been in business for quite some time are very good salesmen for their products. You can put them in front of a prospect or let them talk to a prospect on the phone, and they will make a wonderfully compelling argument for that prospect to buy their service or product or whatever it is. But, however, if you put those people, sit them down at a table, give them a legal pad and a pen, or put them before a word processor, typewriter, or a computer, and have them start to write a letter, they will kind of freeze up, and they won't be, those words will not be the same as that person is when he's in a more relaxed, natural state. And there's a way to overcome that. And this is what I would suggest anybody that's going to write their own copy is, then you probably heard me explain this at seminars. What a way to do it is, if you're talking on prospects, if you're on the phone, tape those telephone conversations. If you're talking to prospects in person, tape those too. Wire yourself up like Miami Vice. And you just keep taping those conversations until something very important happens. And what that is you forget that you're wearing a tape recorder or that you're taping the conversation. And you will begin being your natural self. And during one of those conversations, you will capture yourself on tape at concert pitch. And then what you do is you have that particular tape recording transcribed and reduced to print. And then you simply go over that and take out the ers and ums and references to the letter or to the weather and chit chat and stuff like that. And what you have is a very compelling and proven sales argument that you've proven over the years. The real problem with writing copy for most people who don't do it is that they change. They freeze up and become more formal. And if they could just be themselves, most people could write more compelling copywriter than most copywriters they could ever hire.
Why do you think people freeze up like that?
I don't know what that is. It's just the same reason a lot of people can sit around and at a dinner conversation or cocktails and be scintillating and be interesting, but you put them on stage in front of a few hundred people and give them a mic, and all of a sudden it's, you know, they start thinking about how they have to be more formal, more precise, and they lose that electricity that their personality has.
Well, as if people think they have to perform differently,
right,
in print than they do when they're doing a live presentation.
Yes.
Yeah, well, that's excellent information. So that becomes the basis of a person's sales letter, and then what do they do from there? They've got the transcription of their sales.
Well, there's a couple things they could do. One of them is they could clean it up themselves, or what they could do is at that point they could hire a copywriter and say, this is what I want you to say. In fact, I'll tell you a famous story that illustrates that. Boardroom Reports was started by Marty Eggleston, and what he did is he went to Gene Schwartz, and he told Gene that he had this great idea for this newsletter. And Gene said, well, let me take this, you know, your idea. And Marty had the entire thing, you know, right there on tape. Gene taped it, and he put the tape away. The reason he didn't give it back to Marty right away, because Marty wouldn't think he put enough work in, and made him wait 2 weeks. He had the tape transcribed, gave it back, and then, you know, cleaned it up, gave it back to Marty, and that began Boardroom Reports, which I think now is the biggest newsletter in the world. That's actually how that happened. Marty Engelson already had the story. He already had it. But it's almost like he needed the blessing or the validation of a world-class copywriter like Gene Schwartz.
Right, right. Interesting. Okay, well, now when it comes to sending out sales letters, I want to get a little bit into testing and stuff, even though there's a whole bunch more I want to talk about with sales letters. But I'd like you to give your classic example, which I've swiped and teach all the time in my seminars, which is your famous A-pile versus B-pile philosophy when it comes to mail. You think you can talk a little bit on that?
Well, it's this. The most important thing you need to learn about mail is that the people of America sort their mail while standing over a wastebasket. And they sort it into two piles. One is what I call the A pile, the other is the B pile. The A pile is everything that is personal or appears to be personal. Everybody always opens their A pile mail. The B pile mail is everything that is obviously commercial. Now, sometimes they will open all of their B pile mail. Sometimes they will open none of it. Maybe they'll only, you know, if they're just dying to subscribe to a certain magazine and they see an offer for that with a teaser copy on the outside, that might work, but you can't count on that. And the way you should think about it is that the A-pile letters should be personal, but not Aunt Minnie type personal. You know, personal in the fact of, like, say, an attorney writing to you, or, you know, can you ever imagine an attorney writing you a letter and on the outside of the envelope it says, "Joe, here's hot news about your new lawsuit"? You know, that is not the way people communicate person to person. So you make it a person to person communication and make it look like that. But there's something else that's very, very important that most people overlook. And that is if your mail doesn't look like it's personal, first class mail, you can count on the post office giving it second-class treatment, which often means they throw it away. On the average, 17% of properly addressed bulk mail does not get delivered as it goes through the postal system. And sometimes none of it gets delivered. Sometimes a carrier throws all of it away. So what you should always strive to do is just for the because of the postal service, is you want them to treat your mail as though it's first class. Actually, mailing an envelope using bulk rate postage with a metered bulk rate will often work better than actual first class mail with teaser copy on it, because more of it will be delivered. So it not only needs to be first class, it needs to look first class. Because the post office will then handle it the way they're supposed to, and the customer will give it the importance that you want them to.
Gotcha. Is there a way to make your mail look the first class look, even if it's mailed bulk rate?
Yeah, the thing that you never want to do is use a printed indicia. The dumbest mistake in direct mail is mailing first class and have a printed indicia on it.
Like meter mail.
Well, no, metered mail can look first class, even though you're paying bulk rate. I'm talking about a printed indicia. You know there are bulk rate printed indicias?
Yes.
Well, you can get a first class indicia, too, but you don't want to do that. What you want to do, if you want to pay bulk rate, and sometimes that does make sense, is you want to either use bulk rate stamps or you want it to be metered bulk rate.
Gotcha.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a good recommendation. I believe you agree with this, that most people don't start playing around with bulk rate until they actually have a little bit of knowledge about direct mail in the first place. Would you agree with that?
Well, most people don't consider mailing bulk rate until some advertising expert tells them that's what they should do.
Speaking of advertising experts, what do you feel about most advertising people out there, people that would consider hiring advertising agencies and seeking other people out to help them with their creative advertising?
I think there is more incompetence per capita in the field of advertising than any other American profession except psychiatry.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, we've been talking a little bit about direct mail. Now, there's a bazillion other ways to generate business. You know, you can go to the yellow pages. You can do telemarketing. You can knock on doors. You can put a message on a billboard, the side of a blimp, and Valpax. Do you have a favorite method of promotion, or does that really depend on what you're selling? Or across the board, do you have a favorite way of selling things?
I don't think there's anything that is as good as direct mail.
And is that pretty much for almost every product, carpet cleaning?
Well, I don't know if it would be for every product, but, you know, if I could only pick one, I wouldn't even have to think about it. It would be direct mail. There's probably some things that other medias are better for, but direct mail has a lot of great advantages. I'll tell you what they are. First of all, you're shooting with a rifle instead of a shotgun. You know, you can arrange to mail to a very specific group of people. Secondly, you can test a very small number and get an idea of whether or not you should spend any more money on this particular promotion. Thirdly, you have your results back very quickly. On the average, I found Doubleday, which is the day that you have half of your orders, generally, and it's not precise, occurs maybe if you count the day that you deposit the mail at the post office as day one, on day 12, day 13, or day 14, you have about half of all you're going to get. Sometimes on a real hot direct mail package, you can mail it, and 3 or 4 days later, be in profit. Incidentally, something that people hearing this might want to know is if you're mailing first class, the best day to mail is either Friday or Saturday. If possible, and you don't want to stop your flow to make sure that happens, you want your mail to arrive on a Tuesday, Wednesday, or a Thursday. On Monday, everybody's, you know, very busy with the beginning of the week. On Friday, everybody's, you know, going off thinking about the weekend, etc. So where you can control that, control that. Also, with direct mail, you can start with a very limited amount of money. And let's say that you have something that will appeal to a list universe of 1 million people. You can start with a couple thousand pieces of mail, and as it comes back in, every day you convert the cash or the checks that come back in into postage. So you start by mailing 1,000, 2,000, then you convert the postage to 5,000, then you convert it to 20,000, and you snowball it, and eventually you're mailing 1 million pieces with your real out-of-pocket expenses being no more than it was to mail the initial 5,000.
Right.
Gary, can we talk a little bit about list selection and list rental? Because a lot of people, especially new people getting into direct mail, get ripped off tremendously by list brokers. And since lists tend to be probably the most important part of the entire effort, even more so than the copy and the rest of the promotion, can you tell us about how you would go about picking the right lists?
Yeah, well, there is nothing that you could do better in that area than to hook yourself up with a really good list broker. Make that person your friend and an important business associate and listen to his recommendations. If anybody is selling opportunity-type information or business-type information, the broker I would recommend above all others is Stuart Kogan of Mega Media. I think he's in Costa Rica, California, or Newport Beach, but check Stuart Kogan of Mega Media. But there are a lot of good list brokers, and you need to have a relationship. One of the things that you want to know when you're going out doing a list is you can get with it. There's a lot of information you can get that most people don't know when you rent a list. You can get usage reports. In other words, you'll have a list, and a good broker will tell you who tested that list in the last 2 years or year or whatever period of time you're interested. And not only that, you not only want usage, you especially want to know continuances, because it tells you something. If someone in a field similar to yours has tested that, that's a usage report, and then they continue it. And if that list has a lot of continuances, that's a good list.
Gotcha.
How do you go about picking the list for your particular offer?
If you're not going to use a broker?
Or even if you are going to use a broker.
If you're going to use a broker, then you should let the broker do it. Stay out of his way and his or her way and let them do the job. If you're going to pick the list yourself, in some cases, it's really evident. Like if you're going to be mailing to carpet cleaners or painters or whatever, then that is a compiled list that's available. If you're going to be mailing to a buyer's list, most people know this. The factors that are most important is, how current the list is, how much they spent to buy a similar product, and how often they buy. The ideal customer, for example, for a diet product is someone who very recently and repeatedly spent a lot of money on a diet product. So that's what you would look at. You want to mail basic. Oh, and another thing on list things. Let me tell you something really simple you can do is you should buy everything your competitors sell. And, you should code your name. Like, my name's Gary C. Halbert. Well, you know, I'll buy something and it'll be Gary A. Halbert, Gary B. Halbert, Gary C. Halbert, Gary D. Halbert from each company. And then when mail comes in for Gary B. Halbert, I know that the guy I bought it, I know who's in it to me. Who list is being used? It's a difference. Do you
right.
see what I'm saying?
No,
Gary Calvert, I know it's this other guy's list that I bought.
Some. Regular.
And so the easiest business in the world to accumulate very valuable intelligence about.
And rolling killing. A list to prevent yourself
about
from being ripped off.
Example.
Give you great names for the test. What is your best advice to prevent yourself from that?
Okay, here's the thing that almost nobody will tell you.
Probably
here is the real way to test a list. The first
thing
you should do is tell the or list owner you want the line name. Those are his current buyers, hottest buyers he's got. And generally, you want to mail 5,000. That's
the
test unit. Those hotline names don't work. Nothing is going to work as far as that. You test the hotline name. Okay, let's say you've got results now. And now you're going to go back to the thing of the
line.
Well, what conventional wisdom tells you is, let's say you're going to now test 20,000 names, is that you take a
why even?
In other words, every ninth,
put it into
whatever it is, every 10th, 20th name,
target.
You pull it out. And they'll say that's the only way to get an unbiased statistical sample.
That's
wrong. The way you want to do it is you want the list broker or the list owner to give you a...
No, you do.
How am I going to sell them anything? How many of you have opted into free e-zines right now on the internet? How many of you have opted into free e-zines that actually sell you something every now and then? Amazing, same hands, isn't it? To have a free e-zine that doesn't sell products is a waste of time and energy, wouldn't you think? The only reason to have any e-zine, in fact, the only reason to have a website, folks, is to sell products. And the only reason to have an e-zine is because people have asked you to send them some valuable information on a whatever interval you decide, and they expect you to send them an offer, a great deal on some product that would be of interest to them based on the e-zine they subscribe to. Think there's any money in that? Well, you wait till you listen to Terry Dean. Now, you wait till you get to the Internet Boot Camp where he literally created $50,000 worth of revenue in 2 days by putting a product online and launching it to his e-zine list and watching the money come in right before your eyes. 2 days. 2 days. 50 grand. I talked to Robert Allen here. And I don't know this number to be sure for true, but they have a... Nah. Coaching is an industry. It's not just a product. It's a whole industry. In fact, we're looking into creating a coaching arm of SDI where I've trained the coaches myself. E-zines. Oh, my goodness gracious. Everybody in this room ought to have a list of e-zine subscribers. What is an e-zine? It's an electronic newsletter. It's an opt-in newsletter. Wait till you get to Sunday morning, you'll see. Wait till you see the money that's involved in creating an e-zine and getting people to opt into it. Why would you want to do that? Why would you want to deliver a free e-zine on the internet every week or so when you don't get any money out of it?
Opt-in.
But why would I want to do that for free? Huh? Prospects. Prospects for what?
Automatically increase their profits. If you're in the direct response business, you practically have to do it.
Well, what? Why do you think most people are always chasing after new customers, new customers, new customers? I mean, so many people have heard that a million times, especially a lot of my clients, and I still have to pound it into their heads that they need to mail over and over again. I mean, why do you think there's such an appeal to always want to go after new customers instead of nurturing the other ones?
Well, I'll tell you one reason for it. If everyone is understandably very close to their own business, and because you are dealing with your advertising messages every day, you sort of think that everybody else is too, when in reality, most of the world is not even aware of your existence.
Right.
And so you think that you're going to tire these people of hearing from you. And really what's very much more likely is that you're not going to contact them often enough. One interesting thing to know, if a new customer comes on board, if you could do it exactly, precisely, the most profitable way you should, you would mail to that new customer every 21 days. If you mail more frequently than 21 days, they may tend to get a little tired. If you wait more than 21 days, they're going to kind of forget about you and lose interest. So, you know, rule of thumb is mail at least once a month. The really big, really successful companies, once they get a customer on the books, they often mail 30, 40, 50, 60 times a year to that customer. And don't forget, you can mail that customer something for your own business, or you can mail a completely different offer or that's related to from a different company name in a different location. One of the things that really big-time savvy marketers learn, especially if they're in television, is that they have a successful TV show, they're going to be knocked off. You know what they do? They knock themselves off. So they have a successful television show selling an abdominizer, then they create another company that competes with them selling, you know, super abdominizer. So don't forget that, you know, if your customer is buying something from you and you sell him something, he may still be looking, that same appeal may still appeal to him. You know, a lot of people don't just buy one diet book, they buy 50. And they may not, you may sell them a bunch of those books, or it could be that another company in another state, another geographic location owned by, but it's a big mistake. There's nobody listening to this tape that mails too often. There's no one listening to this tape that mails often enough. Trust me on that.
Yeah, I believe you. Now, there's going to be people listening to tape. You take my carpet cleaners. You take florist people. You take pest control guys. You take heating, air conditioning people. You take home remodelers. You take car sales people. Let's take a car salesperson, for instance. They sell a car to somebody one time now. Some of them might think, well, I sold them a car. They're going to buy another car for 5 years. What on earth should or could I be mailing them a letter about? What would you say to that person?
Well, first of all, in some cases you could be mailing them a letter about selling them another car.
Correct.
Because the most likely thing that people want to buy is something that they just bought. I wrote a promotion for a guy that had Rolls Royces, and they could only mail the letter because I sold every Rolls Royce the guy had. And what I did is I got all the Cadillac owners, all the Lincoln owners in his area, wrote a very personal letter, included a photograph, you know, and said, you know, that you could step up to a Rolls Royce for what you're paying for your Cadillac. Fifth boom, man, he sold every one that he had. The other thing that you can do is it doesn't hurt if you're a car salesman to send just reminders of your existence. You know, that guy Joe Girard, who is the most, he's in the Guinness Book of World Records for the best car salesman who ever lived. One of the things he did is he sent birthday cards, you know, little gifts. He reminded people that he was alive. He bonded himself with them. Also, you can sell related stuff. A guy that buys a car may be interested in a particular deal on car insurance or car service or car detailing or what have you. You know, if a guy sold me, a beautiful Miata convertible, he could write me a letter and say, now that you've got this great Miata convertible, I'd like to suggest a guy, you know, Joe Jones, who comes out and will wash and detail your car every Monday or whenever. You know, and I'd take him up on that.
Right. Right, which is what we call an endorsed relationship, and many of my clients understand that and utilize it. It's a very powerful thing.
Why don't we talk a little bit more about endorsed relationships, considering a lot of the people on your tape are working on smaller budgets, and that could be one of the most profitable venues that they could ever use for growing their business in the beginning. Gary, how would you approach other related non-competitive businesses and possibly even competitive businesses for that type of relationship, and how would you structure the relationship, and what's the best way to promote in an endorsed setting?
Okay, well, let me tell you the worst way to do it. The worst way is to go and try and get someone to understand direct marketing and the potential for it. What you really want to do is put him in a position where you are paying him, and he's getting found money, money that he would not have were it not for your existence, right? And the thing you got to know is most of the people, especially if they're not direct response savvy, have no idea the value of their names. And so you might go tell this guy, you know, look, let me mail this. Don't ever let him mail it if you can stop, you know, control it yourself, and I'll give you X amount of money for every sale. Or if you're pretty sure the names are going to be valuable, just buy them from him outright.
Yeah, I mean, most people, they do not know the value of a name, and most people never mailed a letter before, and something that you mentioned earlier about you start with a small test and then you take the profits of the mailing and put it into a larger mailing. Most people that think direct mail doesn't work are people that have never mailed a letter in their life, let some crafty advertising guy put the promotion together, drop 10,000 of them in the mail, lose a few thousand bucks, and then automatically come to the conclusion that direct mail doesn't work. One thing I want to ask you, which I did not ask you in the beginning, is what is Gary Halbert's definition of marketing?
Well, actually, marketing should be salesmanship multiplied. That's all it is. You know, I learned to be a salesman going door to door selling encyclopedias. And there was a limited amount of doors that I could knock on any given day. You know, I mean, whatever that number was, 20 if I got a lot of answers, or 30 if people weren't home. Then I sat down and wrote a letter that knocked on 600 million doors for me. But I put that salesmanship in a letter, and I multiplied it. Advertising used to be salesmanship in print. Now I think a better definition is salesmanship multiplied, because, you know, you have so many other options. You have telephone, television, radio, PC, internet marketing, and so forth. Advertising or marketing at its peak is salesmanship multiplied. However, something you should need to know is you can't multiply zeros. If that message is not right and you can't do it one-on-one effectively, mailing a million letters isn't going to make it, you know, you're having a million times zero, which is still nothing.
Now, when it comes to the different types of marketing, you know, in our circles, we refer to it as direct response marketing, versus the other type of marketing, which is image or institutional. Could you quickly give a definition between the difference between the two?
Well, image advertising basically can only be used effectively by a giant company that doesn't have to do any selling anymore and just kind of wants to remind people of its existence, like Coca-Cola.
Right.
You don't really need a piece of long, hard-hitting copy to sell somebody on the idea of Coca-Cola. You kind of just need to remember, hey, you ought to have a Coke. It's nice. On the other hand, if you're selling something and generally you're selling something to a stranger, and you're generally selling a product that person doesn't know about, you need to give them every sales argument that you can. Let me illustrate that for you. Let's suppose that God, for some reason, told you that the woman or man that you were going to spend the rest of your life with, he was going to give you, you had to pick that person out of a group of 100 people that he selected. And just because he felt playful, he was never going to let you meet that person in person. That you weren't going to get to talk to him on the phone, weren't going to get to see a video, weren't going to get the photo. But he told every one of those people, so, you know, let's say it's women, since some of us are guys here, you know, and you've got to pick the woman, the only woman that you're ever going to be with for the rest of your life, from a letter. And each one of those 100 women writes a letter to you. What would you want the letter to say? Would you want it to say, "Hi, my name is Bunny. I'm a Pisces. I like walks on the beach and horses. Hope you pick me." I don't think so. What you would want is you would want that woman to tell you everything about her. To bring it down to a little bit more realistic, suppose that were true of a car, that you had to choose the car you were going to buy. Suppose that were true of a car. That you had to choose the car you were going to buy. And, you know, from a letter, not a picture, not anything. You would want a pretty damn detailed letter. You wouldn't want something that says, "Hey, this car looks great, it's got aerodynamics down and gets really good gas mileage." That's not what you'd want to hear. You'd want to know how many, did it have four doors, how much horsepower, exactly how much gas mileage it got. You'd want to know the genesis of it, how that car was developed, the team of engineers that worked at it, they all had degrees from the Pasadena Art Institute or, you know, some famous college of design, et cetera, et cetera. And unless you are Coca-Cola or Nike or somebody, you better be telling your full story, and you ought to tell it as though this is the only chance you're ever going to get to tell it.
Okay, and so which means that people shouldn't try to shorten the message because they feel that people are not going to pay attention.
You know, the thing is, people will read. They will not read anything that's boring or uninteresting to them, no matter how short or how long it is. But if they're really interested, the more you tell, the more you sell is a true axiom. And it's been tested. You know, as long as what you're saying is relevant, a four-page letter will outpull a two-page letter, 8 pages will outpull 4, 16 will outpull 8, and I don't know where it stops, but it doesn't stop at 100 pages.
What's the longest sales letter you've ever wrote?
Probably 30-some pages, 32 probably.
Gotcha. So, I mean, right here, and you know more than anyone, the more you tell, the more you sell. I have arguments with people that are told constantly by the Yellow Page rep or by some advertising guy that you got to leave a lot of white space and keep it uncluttered, and that's total and utter nonsense in all circumstances?
Yes.
Good. Okay. Well, let's talk a little bit about other things that people can do other than compelling copy, powerful headlines. Let's talk a little bit about offers, which is what most advertising lacks. What's an offer?
Well, the offer is after the list or the audience. The offer is the most important thing. Now, let me back up a little bit and tell you why people do not buy. The number one reason that people don't buy what you're selling is they don't want it. Okay? Period. They don't want it. The number two reason they don't buy it is they can't afford it. The number three reason they don't buy it is because they are not fear-free enough to buy it from you. So, the most common offer is, if you will give me X amount of money, I will give you this product or service. If you want to just go a step above that, then it will be, if you will give me X amount of money, I will give you this product or service, and if you don't like it in 30 days, I'll give you your money back. If you want to go a little bit, you know, then you want to go clear to the other end, and you say, look, you know, there's a classic story of two farmers have a horse to sell, and they both tell the prospective buyer all the merits of the horse, but the guy who gets the sale says, look, I'll tell you what, take the horse, you use it for 30 days, and if you like it, pay for it. If you don't, bring it back. Take the risk out of it. That's the best thing that you can do for an offer. Speaking of offers, let me tell you something else everybody should do. When you make an offer through television, print, direct mail, or anything, you should make the very best offer you can humanly possibly make to the very best list you can get your hands on. The strongest offer, of course, is send no money. You know, that's something that you can't always do. But the thing is, what you don't want to do is make a weaker offer than you could make and sort of get close to making it and then say, well, maybe if I would add this guarantee or maybe if I would lower this. Mail, if you're going to fail, you want to fail as fast as humanly possible. You know, you do. You want to fail right now.
That is true. And
so you make the best offer to the best list, etc. Then if it fails, you forget it and go to the next thing. You know if you're selling it on, you send no money till you test it out and nobody buys. They're sure as hell not going to buy when you say send the money up front.
Okay. So, take as much of the risk out of doing business with you as humanly possible. Put it all on your shoulders. Now let's talk about urgency. How do you get people to respond right away? Give us some of those wonderful Gary Halbert techniques.
Well,
on urgency.
One thing you can do if you're going for leads, there's a test Claude Hopkins did.
Who is Claude Hopkins?
Claude Hopkins was probably the greatest advertising man that ever lived. He was back in the 20s and 30s. He wrote Scientific Advertising. Some of the stuff he put on the map are still there. B.F. Goodrich, Palmolive, a bunch of things. I think it was Schlitzbier, whatever. But he did a test where people, to introduce a new product, they could get a free sample of this product, and in one cell of the test, you could get it only by telephoning. In another, you could get it only by requesting it by mail. And the third cell, you could get it by phoning or writing in and asking for it. The telephone-only option eclipse the other two options by a factor of 3 to 1. Now, that was a test that was done several decades ago. I did it very recently, several times, and I got the same numbers. The telephone-only option tripled any other way of getting leads. Now, what I think about that is if you give them the option of writing in, they'll set it aside to do it, and delay is the death of a sale. If you're finding that 70% of your orders are coming in through the phone, then stop giving the people the option to order by fax or mail. You know, you're not going to lose the other 30% because a certain percentage of those are going to order anyway, and you're going to get more orders than you would have because they have to do it right away. Also, there should be real reasons that someone should order from you now. You know, an offer can't last forever. They really cannot. I mean, it may run out of stock. You know, it's going to be eclipsed by another style or what have you. And it is important to tell the people that, you know, that you should tell them that the offer is not going to be available, or it's going to be changed, or that you can't guarantee it.
Gotcha. Well, in the service businesses, some where I deal with carpet cleaning and such, so many people deal with price, and that's their offer so many times, and they think that that's the only thing that they have that's an advantage over anyone else, because a lot of people in the service businesses don't educate their clients. So what recommendations can you give those people?
Well, first of all, if you're competing on price, you better be Walmart or somebody like this, because there's always someone that can come along and offer a lower price than you. In fact, all they have to do is have more money than you and more purchasing power and buy their widgets or whatever cheaper. So you basically don't ever want to set yourself up as being the success of your business being price dependent. What you want to do is you want to sell solutions that people believe in. You know, I mean, if you have to have bypass surgery, do you want a deal? If you're going to have dental work, you know, I mean, I would like a dentist to tell me compelling reasons why I'm going to have a $1 million smile and no pain whatsoever. I don't want to change $20 on that. I don't want to get my carpet cleaned by somebody that doesn't know what he's doing and is leaving all kinds of bacteria in there to fester and reach up and get me. You know, and if someone tells me, yeah, I charge more, I'll tell you, I can't do it as cheap as these other guys. And I'll tell you why, because I won't do it these way. When I do it, I insist on doing all of these things. You know, and people will buy value if you make them understand that it is value.
Okay, in the way.
Now, let me go further, a little further about that. I'm probably maybe the most expensive copywriter in the world, and some people have talked about that. And one of the things I tell them is, look, you know, basically, a really good copywriter is free, you know, because you're paying him because he will make you so much more money than a mediocre guy. You go out and look for a deal on copy, you know, and let's suppose that you get some guy to write a copy for you for, you know, $1,000 or something, and you get a certain result. Well, you got a real bargain there compared to what you pay me or compared to what you pay John Carlton and Gary Benzabinga. The only thing is, you miss several $1 million in profits you would have got by hiring the right guy. Where's the deal there?
Right.
What is the best deal you can get on a car? Is it a cheap car or a really quality car? It's a quality car, because when you consider the trade-in value, you know, like if you buy a Lexus and it's worth almost as much when you trade it in, etc., it's actually cheaper to buy a better car. It's cheaper to use a better copywriter.
Well, speaking about high-priced copy, which I really like you building that point, is I've actually... You know, occasionally when me and Brian, who both teach people how to market their businesses and include them with just tons of excellent, proven, killer copy, where someone just, I mean, if anyone takes a smidgen of mine or Brian's information and implements it into their business, the returns could be not only the cost of what we charge them, but 1,000 times more. And both me and Brian have had situations where that have happened. You know, people made hundreds of thousands of dollars with his information and my information. And some people just don't see any value whatsoever. And the main reason is that those people that normally don't see any value just outright don't implement anything, or they just give up, you know, right from the start, or they have that loser attitude right from the beginning. What would a good copywriter, someone like you, charge somebody to write a letter so people can see the comparisons versus getting a deal versus getting the best?
Well, first of all, generally someone who has a mindset like that is pretty frozen, and they're not even worth dealing with.
I agree.
If someone cannot understand the value... You know, basically, when I buy things, and I don't like to buy very many things, I'm not very materialistic, but I want it to be the best of those things that I can buy. Because the best is always the cheapest. Not the cheapest, but it's always the best value in the long run. Well, I think on things that are important in your life, you want the best. You want the best doctor, the best dentist, the best copywriter. You want the best list broker. I think you want the best auto mechanic. I mean, do you want a guy giving you a deal on a brake job who's you know, really second or third best? You'd probably change your mind about that when you're going down a real steep hill and the damn brakes don't work, right? And generally, I believe that, you know, just because someone's more expensive doesn't mean they're better. But usually the people who are really good are going to cost more. But the thing is, look, let's say, let me give you some real world examples. There was a guy came to me when I was charging $15,000 plus 5% of gross sales. This is back in the 80s. He'd never heard of anybody charging that much, and he couldn't afford it. But he said, can I pay it half down and half later? I said, yeah. I said, you give me half of it, I'll write the ad, but I won't give you the ad till you give me the other. So he gives me $7,500. I write the ad, and then he scrapes up the other $7,500, and I give him the ad. He runs it. Well, that was pretty expensive, because he could have got that ad done for $500. The only thing is, my ad made him $40 million. How much did the ad cost him?
Nothing.
Thing cost him nothing. And if he'd gotten a bargain, a $500 guy or a $1,000 guy, you know, generally the letter's not going to work. So what he's doing is he's just wasting. And the truth is, the really good people know what they're worth. You know, there isn't any bargaining with a guy like me. There isn't any bargaining with a really great surgeon. Why should I bargain with somebody? The best people are always... have more demand than they can get. If your kid had a heart problem, I mean, are you going to look around for a deal and for a surgeon? I don't think you're going to do that. And that's that.
Well, I think that really spelled out the exact point that I wanted people to understand. And, you know, it is so important because, you know, people that come into this funnel in introductions into, you know, people like myself, Brian Kay, Gary Halbert, you know, the people that we recommend. I mean, they're getting such a tremendous value, and you're discovering people that can give you advice and information on marketing that you're not going to get from any advertising agency. And I've seen so many people that won't even think about spending $1,000 a month on a phone book ad that they don't even put a second of thought into. They give their logo to the advertising guy and tell him to develop it, and they'll spend $12,000 a year running an ad they have no earthly investment into, no idea what they're actually doing, and let someone create it that has no information whatsoever about their business other than looking at other people that are advertising in the same industry that are all doing the same stupid stuff, and they'll look at that as a necessary business expense. But when it comes to laying down a few grand to do something that can make them, you know, hundreds, thousands, if not millions of sales, then they're like, oh, well, should I do it? Is it a good deal? And it's just such ridiculous nonsense that so many people experience. Well, you know, making comparisons of, you know, price versus value, so many people speak in terms of features instead of benefits. And I want you to talk a little bit about what is the difference between a feature and a benefit, because I think most advertising is institutional image, and it's always features, features, features. What is a feature and what is a benefit?
Well, let's talk about those people you described first.
Sure.
Rather than try and convince them that they should do the right thing, just forget about those people and, you know, go out and find the natural hustlers, the natural entrepreneurs. Now, the difference between features and benefits can best be described by travel advertising. If you're in the travel business, you don't sell the trip. You sell the destination.
You don't tell people, yes, here's what you're going to get. You're going to get to drive to the airport. Your plane is delayed three times, and then we're going to sandwich you in there like a sardine, and we're going to have, you know, no more good-looking stewardesses. We got, you know, 90-year-old women who snarl at you and throw peanuts and give you bologna sandwiches, and, you know, the thing bumps, and then you're going to go down and yada, yada, yada. That's the reality of it. What you tell them about is the beach that they're going to end up on. They're going to be laying on this beach with all these topless girls or you know, in this nice, it's going to be warm instead of cold where they're at in this godforsaken place where they live. You're selling the destination. The destination is the benefit. Now, a detail in that case, details or a feature is that you're going to be on a 747 or something. And sometimes the features they're important to put in there because they credential what you're doing and make it more valid. But people buy the benefits. They want the end result. And what you want to do in your advertising is enable those people to picture with pleasure what they're going to have as a result of doing business with you. Can I give you an example of that?
Absolutely.
I wrote a campaign once that was mailed in the millions, and it was for a product that was for men who were having a little bit of a sexual problem. And the way I did it is I took a picture of a beautiful woman, and I attached that picture, not printed, a picture at the top of each letter. And I said, can you imagine making love to a woman like this or spending the night with her? Could be the most exciting night of your life, or it could be the most embarrassing. And they were able to picture what that would be like. What if, instead of doing that, I had described the chemical composition of the pill or, you know, how many pages were in the report or whatever? That's not what they want. You know, they want the end result.
Gotcha.
Gary, in many cases, when you're telling people the end result, one of the biggest things or obstacles a person has to come over in marketing is to be believed. How do you enhance the believability or credibility of what you're stating to be true, is true, to a consumer who is fearing the decision?
Well, first thing you do is you give those people the impression or the reality that they can get in touch with you after the sale. A good way to do that is, first, you never use a post office box. You always use a street address. You can improve on that and saying, I'm right across from the library, right next to the police station. As a general rule, not just a little bit of arcane information, it's generally the best address you can have is in whatever the First National Bank building of any city. You know, I'm located on the third floor of the First National Bank building in Massillon, Ohio. I don't know why, but that's the best address. So you tell them where you're at, and you give them, you know, say if you ever want to stop in, you know, here's where we're at. Always include your telephone number and not your 800 number, your POTS line, plain old telephone service, even if you only have a recording on there. The idea that they want to know that you're not going to disappear. Those are some ways. You know, of course, there are testimonials from actual people. And don't use testimonials that say, EJ, Scottsdale. Give that person's name and give that person the telephone number and buy that person a recording machine and a telephone line. You know, so that the people, you have 10 people on there they can call, that they can reach out and touch you. You know, give them that kind of reassurance. And testimonials are a great way to do it. How long you've been in business is a good way to do it. An overlooked way to get credibility is to have a celebrity, you know, sign your letters or endorse. And that doesn't have to be expensive. You want what I call love boat celebrities. Those are people whose names have marquee value, but at the same time, they're not in the current movie, you know, like Men in Black or something. These are people whose names are known, you know, that did a love boat series, etc. You can get those people to work with you remarkably inexpensive. And the thing is, people who see actors on television in the movies, they think they know that person. And that person is more believable than you. In Hollywood, everybody denies it. But the truth is, they have, I forget what they call it, the something quotient, but they have a rating of the most believable people you can have. Like, at one time, the top person was Alan Alda. If he said it, it was true. And Walter Cronkite was one. I don't know who it is now. But still, a lot of these people who are celebrities but are not currently making an awful lot of money, because they're saying it, is more believable. And you can get them a lot less expensively than you would think you could get them. One way you can get a celebrity, if you want me to tell them, is called Don Camp. 310-281-6970. Call Ingalls Inc. in California to get them. But, you know, you can try that. You know, just imagine you get two people get a letter from a carpet cleaner soliciting business, and one of them is Ernest Borgnine telling them why they should use your service, and the other one is Joe Blow, who they don't know. All things, and also people like to rub up against celebrity. That's one way you can do it. Get the police to endorse what you're doing. You know, get the mayor to do that. I've had mayors. I had the mayor of Key West endorse what I was doing. Align yourself with a charity, and for real, give that charity a part of it. Have the mailing come from the charity. Have the response go back to a charity.
It's great information.
Tell them that they can see your ad in Entrepreneur Magazine. You know, tell them what page it was on. Tell them exact. Be specific. Let them know you're real.
Do you think it's powerful to have a letter come as opposed to just a celebrity, which is an incredible idea, a real-life customer's mouth as opposed to coming from the company's mouth?
Actually, I think they're both good. I think a real-life customer is very good, you know, especially if it's a story, you know, how I did this that changed my life. I don't think it should be either or, that the question should you do this or that? For most of the people listening to this, they should do both, and a third and fourth and fifth thing, you know?
Okay. What's the best way to get business?
The best way to get business?
Yeah, the reason I'm asking that is Dan Kennedy, you know, he tells a story about his chiropractor client that built practices and made lots of money, and he ended up teaching other chiropractors how to do it, and other chiropractors would go up to this chiropractor guru and say, you know, what's the best way to get business? And the guy would say, well, I don't know of one best way to get patients, but I do know about 50 or 100 different ways to get a patient, and I use every one of them. And I think that's a little bit of kind of where I'm leading to, is that I don't want people to get stuck on thinking, well, you know, this is the way that I now generate business. I mean, there's many different ways to get business. And with the tools such as direct mail, there's many techniques and strategies and sequencing and all types of things within direct mail that people could use. And so, I mean, maybe that's not as clear as I'd like it to be, but how could you...
Well, I could give you a piece, give everybody a piece of advice in two words.
Yes.
That'll put them 90% ahead of their competition. Do something. Most people do nothing. Do anything. You know, run an informative Yellow Page ad. Send a postcard. Get a sound truck and drive down the neighborhood and say, I clean carpets better than anybody else. Just do something. Do it even if you do it wrong. If you're at point A, you want to get to point B, you're going to make X number of mistakes no matter what. My motto is, let's start making them. Don't wait till you get it perfect. You don't have to get it perfect. You got to get it started. The answers are going to come through movement, not through meditation. Most of these people aren't doing well. It's because they're emotionally frozen, anal retentive losers. Move. They got to move.
What separates winners from losers? I mean,
motion.
Emotion?
Motion.
Motion.
Yes.
Okay.
I have one thing to ask. A lot of these guys, especially, I'm assuming the service professionals listening to these tapes, they've been taught that the best way to get future customers is through referrals. However, virtually no one I've ever seen or heard really knows how to ask for referrals properly, or they fear asking for referrals. What have you discovered to be the best way to generate referrals without fear or embarrassment on the part of the business owner asking for them?
Well, first of all, you do a superb job. And if you're a carpet cleaner, for example, you at the moment they come in and look at the freshly cleaned, fluffed up carpet when they're feeling best about it, and you say something like, it really looks good, doesn't it? And say, yeah. And say, listen, I want to ask you a favor. You know, could you give me, you know, the names of a few other people that could benefit by this? I would really appreciate it. Just ask for it. And you know the thing is, that you're trying to say, how can they overcome the fear of doing this? That's to hell with it. They're not going to overcome the fear of it. If you're 100 years old and you see a pretty woman sitting across the restaurant, you want to go ask her something, and you get up, your heart's going to be in your mouth. Now, you don't have a choice of being afraid or not afraid in life. You're going to be afraid. You're either going to be afraid and frozen or scared and moving. That's your choice. You know, how do I do without being afraid? Hey, forget it. Just do it while you're afraid.
Well, you know, we were talking when we met in Denver about the comfort zone and stuff. And, you know, I mean, I know we're talking about marketing, but I think it's such important advice, and I think that you do such a superb job of explaining why you believe the hierarchy of needs is not necessarily the best philosophy, if you would call it that. I mean, talk about comfort zone and breaking out of comfort zone.
I think that people will actually struggle harder to stay in their comfort zone than they will to save their own life. That you know, if you take a bar that is really crummy and has high prices and is dirty and it's doing a good business, and you buy that bar, clean it up, redecorate it, and lower prices, you'll lose their clientele because those people know that they didn't belong in that nicer place. And you know, a little unknown thing is that many restaurants across the country have this long plastic fork-like thing. For people who they're eating, especially meat, and if they're older, they can't, you know, masticulate it well enough, and it gets stuck in their throat. And the antidote is, you know, you open a person's mouth, put this, like, long, huge plastic tweezers down there, and pull that chunk out of their throat. A lot of people will die because they don't want, they're too embarrassed to have someone do that. So they will sit there and asphyxiate rather than be embarrassed. But if you're going to be one of life's winners, you've got to step out of your comfort zone. And if you're not going to do that, what you should do is move to Barberton, Ohio, buy a station wagon and a bowling ball and join two bowling leagues and bowl for the rest of your life and hang out with your dull spouse and do dull things. Which is about enough for this tape, isn't it?
Sure. Well, we can wrap it up. Let's see if it... Oh, wait. Before we wrap it up, I want to talk about one last thing, which I think everyone doesn't do, and I think you do a superb job of explaining it, which is creating bonding with your customers, because I feel if people create bonding, then they will have as many customers as they could ever need, and they will do very well in business. So let's talk about bonding, and we'll wrap up the tape.
All right. Well, I think you should astonish your customer if you can, but that is at another level. So rather than try and get the listeners to do this, you know, first of all, when's the last time you had, I'm asking you, Brian, because you're not a carpet cleaner, you've had a carpet before in your life, right?
Yes.
And do you ever have that carpet cleaned?
Very rarely.
Did you, but you've had a carpet cleaned?
Absolutely.
In your life? Did you ever get a letter from the carpet cleaner who did that?
Absolutely not.
Never happened.
Never
and
happened.
What if they just sent you a nice letter and said, I really appreciate your business and I hope that you'll think of me when you need your carpet cleaned again?
I'd feel great.
The thing is, you bond after the sale. You know, most in America, generally, once somebody sells you something, you're dead meat. You know, they got your money. It's next. That's silly, because it's five times more profitable to work with somebody who's already bought. So contact them and say thank you. That's the simplest thing you can do. Send a letter and say, I really enjoyed being out to your house the other night, and yada, yada, yada. Just say thanks.
Well, with that, we'll end the tape. This is the best of my knowledge. I think I'm probably the only person that I'm aware of that ever was able to contain Gary Halbert in a room long enough to interview him. And I do want to say thank you, Gary. You've been a great, great source of learning for me. Your writings are the one that actually got me into this business. And to all the listeners, if you are interested in hearing more from Gary, contact my office. I'll tell you how to get a hold of his newsletter. He writes a phenomenal newsletter. Brian K. puts out excellent information, great business opportunity information. If anyone's interested in either Gary or Brian, please call my office. The phone number there is area code 602-858-0008. The fax is 602-858-0004. I hope this tape was valuable. Let me know what you thought about it. Let us know. We'll produce more of these for you. And until next time, go out there, eat your competition alive, make tons of money. This is Joe Polish. Bye.
Thank you for listening to this tape. We hope you found it profitable. If you would like additional information on how to receive more educational tapes designed specifically to improve your profits and productivity, then call the Piranha Support Team and get signed up on the Joe Polish Superstar Audio Tape of the Month. Then you will never be at a loss for the best marketing and management information in the industry. The number is 480 480- 480-858-0008. The fax is 480-858-0004. Or visit Joe's website at www.tapeofthemonth.com to see a list of all the interviews Joe has available. As Joe Polish would say, eat your competition alive.